You are listening to episode 128 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Tweeting Selfies While Driving. So, Oscars happened last weekend, right?
Yeah, while we were doing the show, they were announcing the...
That's right, we stopped for no one.
Yeah, exactly. Not even the Super Bowl. We'd stop for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, did we? No, we, well...
We've always gone after the Super Bowl, but yeah. We would stop for the Super Bowl. Outside of that, though, we've gone straight through playoff games with our favorite teams playing. We stopped for no
Boom.
One.
Dedication.
Exactly.
Zach never rests, neither do we. So, Oscars happened, and Samsung had a pretty big deal, I guess. They had ads running. They gave Ellen, who I guess was the host.
Yeah, she was pretty funny. I'll give her that.
Funny. That's cool. That's cool. They gave her a phone and were like, use it.
Well, they paid $20 million for some big commercial spots as a big sponsor of it. So they were like, you know, you're using a phone out on stage. You're using a Samsung Galaxy S5, baby.
Yep. And so she did. And part of what she did was she took a bunch of selfies, which I guess was her idea, not even Samsung. So there you go.
No.
And I guess she took this one. It's got a couple faces you might recognize in it. I think I recognize at least two.
You're really up on the pop culture.
Just so you know, I am. One of my favorite things to do is to say at least, and then say just some ridiculous number, and like ridiculous low. People just right. That's one of my favorite things to do.
This is technically true.
I know. Exactly. So I love doing those kind of things. That's my new shtick. And so anyways, apparently that was the most retweeted picture or tweet of all time. What was it? 2.6 million retweets or something? Yeah, there you go. And counting. To beat the former number one, which was Obama's victory tweet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so... Yeah, so she did that, and so there was this cool article on Pando Daily, which I feel like they changed their name to Pando, but what do I know? Maybe they did, and they just anyways. They were just talking about, you know, did the Samsung thing pay off? And what was interesting, they said, maybe, because the whole thing was like, did what they do make sense? And what they were really saying is that it actually had a better ROI for Twitter. And even then they were like, what's the value of a retweet?
Yeah.
One of their points was like, okay, 2.6 million retweets, that's great. But in terms of, and I don't know if I can find it fast enough, audience capture, there were like, you know, 20 million people watched the commercials. So the commercial still had a bigger impact, but this was kind of free, kind of spontaneous, which is part of the, you know, the other hard part. And so anyways, they were saying that like one of the hard parts of what they're doing is that, you know, they're kind of just leaving it up to chance in a way with the content itself. They're like, it could pay off big time. It could not. You know, they run into a snafu where it's not really a snafu per se, but like Ellen was using her iPhone backstage and, you know, and
she's an iPhone user primarily.
Yeah. To which it was like, hello, celebrities don't always use what they're endorsing. Shocker. You know, it's kind of like no news other than it's kind of like, man, it's a bad time to find out, but you know, whatever. But they were saying that like, this was actually kind of a big, kind of, I don't know, turned out not to be because it worked out, but kind of a big deal for Twitter.
Yeah.
Because they said, like, she chose to take the picture and post it on Twitter instead of doing it on Instagram. And had she done it on Instagram, it would have been a de facto way of saying Facebook won. And as a result, it's saying, Twitter's still relevant, and there are a lot of celebrities who are on it, and they're not early adopters, they're slow adopters, and so if they're still on Twitter, that means Twitter's got this big wave that it's just still going, it's still moving. Though if you look at their stats of new users, you're like, well, maybe.
Go ahead. I do want to interject here because it was a big deal that she used chose to use Twitter instead of Instagram. But a few hours later, at one of the post parties, Justin Bieber took a picture of his former girlfriend, ex-girlfriend Selena Gomez, which, if you don't know that, good for you. and posted it to Instagram. All of the believers, Justin Bieber's fans, got all super excited about it because it's like, why are you posting a picture of your ex? Well, anybody who's had an ex I get it. I know why he was doing that. It's not them getting back together, trust me. It got like retweeted. It got just a ton of of attention and stuff, and people were like resharing it and stuff, and actually crashed Instagram briefly, and did not get as many reshares as Ellen's tweet got retweeted, which it's funny. I've never heard of any Facebook service going down from overuse, getting a DDoS attack effectively. Yeah. Which is astounding that it's, that something that was really and truly a smaller social, wave than Ellen's Sophie took down Instagram. So it was a good decision to go with Twitter because that would have really cramped your style. That being said, she wasn't using a Galaxy S5. She was using a Galaxy Note 3. If it weren't for the fact that she used her iPhone backstage, I think it would have been worth way less money for Samsung. Because, we pay a lot of attention to this. I'm in this weird, category of I watched a lot of the Oscars after we got before we started and after we got done. I watched video of it. I listened to news that talks about it. I also listen to news that talks about technology. And I'll tell you what, if she had not used her iPhone, I would have had no clue that she used the Samsung phone. Wouldn't even have crossed my mind. And I think from Samsung's perspective, they were paying $20 million to get a big ad on the TV show, and then they said, okay, Ellen, you're not allowed to use your iPhone during the show. It was the only reason why they had her taking the pictures, and with her selfies, she hashtagged them as hashtag blurry and stuff, making fun of the quality that the phone shows uses. But if there weren't that controversy there, nobody would have talked about it. Nobody would have known it was an Android phone. And I think Samsung would have considered that a victory because at least they wouldn't have been talking about, her iPhone being used. They wanted no attention being taken off of their big commercial. That was what they were paying for. The very fact that, the Samsung Galaxy Note 3 got mentioned at all was a victory. And the only reason it got mentioned is because she used her iPhone backstage, which I think is interesting. And a lot of people are sitting there going, is this big faux pas of theirs to let, to have her, instantly go back to tweeting from her iPhone. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. I don't think they're going to see it that way. I did read an article, and it's pretty funny, A History of Samsung's Advertising Gone Wrong, where they went through and whole, they've got Kate Upton. She was at this, big Samsung Galaxy Note press conference thing, and, she's just being a model, whatever. And there's a picture of her with her iPhone 4 sitting right next to her. T-Mobile CEO tweeted about how awesome his new Samsung phone was, and he tweeted from his iPhone. They've got like just all sorts of stuff, and you know where like they've tried to do these like try to use Facebook to try to get these viral marketing things going on, and like you tell us how awesome your different phones are. Open everybody will like talk about their Samsung. People end up talking about their Facebook or their iPhones. And then obviously just some of their like epically bad ads, like the Galaxy Gear ad, which was, you know, majorly criticized, you know, and it's, and they just, this thing goes on and on and on for the, all their different, like, you know, wow, this was just bad press for Samsung. And I do not believe that there's no such thing as bad press. There is bad press. That being said, all of their bad press tends to be the good kind of bad press, where people talked about the Galaxy Gear ad because it was so bad, and people, you know, and it stuck in your mind, and people realized it, and, you know, it's more Ovaltine, please. You know, it's one of those things.
Did not make me buy Ovaltine, I'll tell you that.
I know.
Well, the exact opposite.
Well, that's because I've never even tasted Ovaltine. I don't know if it'd be good or not. I don't want to find out. I don't want to support a company that would have an advertising campaign that annoying. But
exactly.
For Ovaltine fans, it worked as like, you know, imprinting this thing into their mind. It, you know, they walk into the store, more Ovaltine, please. Oh my gosh. But you know, for Samsung, for Samsung, it's, you know, there are products that, by and large, the only reason I think people know that the product exists is because of some majorly fumbled ad campaign that they went through. And I don't know. And not to mention the fact that they've just opposed it with some good marketing campaigns where, like, you know, making fun of, you know, of people waiting in line for the next iPhone, which, you know, I personally find as an annoying commercial, but I acknowledge the fact that it was a good commercial and did what they wanted to do. And I only find it annoying because it's attacking people like me. But I don't know. I think it's, it was an interesting, it's interesting to kind of see how the, you know, how it's, you know, it's worked for them better than you'd think. Their failures have worked for better for them than you might suspect that they should.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Right.
I would agree. There's one where I wish that, how do I want to describe it? That they just worked better in general. So Microsoft has shown some research that they're doing in the living room, and some of their living room stuff I wish would come true. And I understand when they say it's like legitimately hard, but they've created this new browser. They're calling it a 3D browser. I don't know why it's called 3D browser, but that's okay. It's called Surround Web, where the idea is you have your screen, and then around your television screen is information about whatever it is that you're looking at on the television. So they've got like pictures of an event or different thumbnails of TV shows going on. Again, this is like, imagine you have your television screen and then you have a wall behind your television. And so there's other images that are on the wall, not necessarily for reading per se, but you know, there's so like thumbnails of other channels that you might have pinned. Contacts who may or may not be online. So like in this example here, they've got, you're watching a race on your television, and what they've got is like the leaderboard above it.
That's cool.
So it's, you know, adding information that typically would be on that second screen, your iPad, adding that to the actual screen itself, which is kind of neat. And then they show... So dumb. on one of them, just fake windows. And, you know, like above your television, because, yeah. you know, just because you wanted to feel like you were outside or something. It projects windows on it. Then it also has a screen, like, on the side of the room, too. So it's like, oh, another window.
Weird.
And then the one that I actually think is probably the most interesting is, I don't know, 3D browser is such a wrong thing to say. But it's like an extended screen. I guess. So, like, they pull up a map, which, again, I don't know why you'd be looking at a map on your television screen, but that's a different story. And what it has is, in a lot of detail, the part that's on the screen has the map, but then it extends off the screen, and they're showing this in the same amount of detail, but it could be, like, less detail. Yeah. And, you know, so you get a bigger context where you're at. And what I actually really liked is they have something called the Illumi Room, which was this exploratory concept, which I so wish were actually real, because it looks awesome in their concept video, where essentially it's like, in this particular example, you're playing a video game, and you're going through, and it's, you know, it's 1080p, high-def graphics for the part that's on the screen,
yeah.
but then it extends off the screen, and it's just like sketch. And so, you know, it's very rudimentary, but it gives you an entire... you know, feel of the room just in a lot lower res detail. Again, you know, it's going off of plants and off of bookshelves and whatever. And, yeah. it, you know, so it extends to give you this surrounding. And there might be cases where all it really does too is it whatever color that was on the screen, it just extends the color. It may not even show a picture, but if it's a brown building, that part of it's brown. If it was a blue sky, then it extends a blue over there. If you fire a shot and there's a bullet that goes, you know, you might see the fire of the gun go up. And they're like, the problem with that is that it's ridiculously hard to program in.
Yeah, definitely like that. Go and watch this video, guys. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like, like I said, I watched it and went, oh, I want that. That's...
Oh, I like they showed a clip of somebody playing the Nintendo, or they're playing Mario Kart, and they were going through one of the winter maps, and it was snowing. All around.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, it's just like, it's this immersive thing. And so I just saw that, and Microsoft revealed the browser, which I get it. It's a lot easier to do. And so that one actually stands a chance of seeing the light of day.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I want the video game one, yeah. the interactive one. That would be so cool. But I think it's a neat. I like some of the ways that they're thinking about the living room and how do we make them more interactive. You know, the context thing, that's so classic. Who cares? I don't just don't give me my contacts. But I could definitely see. I like the one where it's got a pin of other television shows that you might be watching, so you can flip back and forth to them, you know, the picture in picture, but it's off the screen. And so your main display isn't, you know, impeded.
This would require me to have a cable, right?
Probably to take advantage of that. Or not, I don't know. Maybe for broadcast, whatever. But then also be able to pull in other information about whatever you're seeing. And I mean, I could totally see, and they're probably thinking about this in the back of their heads, where you know, with television shows, you have advertisers. What if you just got like a banner ad going across the top for, you know, whatever it is that you're showing for the television show? So you've got that. You've got other stuff where it's like, oh, you know, so if it says subscribe to us on Facebook, oh, check it out. Here's their Facebook page. You can subscribe. You know, they can take those action steps, and
you know what I think is fascinating about this, about that, is that, well, Apple is going in the direction of they're trying to build in more and more features that allow you to take everything off the screen.
Yeah,
full screen apps. We want no distractions. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is going in the direction of we want more distractions. We want to give you opportunities to see more and more stuff. Which is interesting. I, you know, it's funny. My personal opinion is I'm at this point in my life, I'm working on not playing games while I watch movies, not goofing off on my phone while I watch. Mm. You know, it's like I'm at this weird place where it's like I can't really fall asleep without like a TV show in the background and watching some, you know, stupid YouTube video of somebody painting. Like, I need full on you know, incredible white noise. Yeah, I need my brain completely, you know, ADD'd out. Like,
I'm weird.
Yeah, I am weird. I am weird. But, you know, but it's like, but I had taken that to the point of I couldn't even watch, I could barely sit in a theater and watch a movie because I would get bored. I mean, and you know, granted, like, I'm a functional ADD, you know, person, you know, and I, so for me, like, I do get really into that, give me more data, give me more information, give me more stuff, but at the same time, I realize that it's not necessarily healthy to be like that, and
yeah.
So, I
don't know, I see what you're saying.
That being what I was about to say was, but what I like about the video game Illumiroom thing is that basically what they've done where this like side browser thing gives you a bunch of other information to distract you, that one is designed to mask all of the other things going on in your room so that all you have is the one thing that you're focusing on. It turns your entire room into the game you're playing. And which I think is an interesting, you know, and it's it goes the opposite direction. And that to me is more compelling. That's like you said, that's something that I want. That's exciting. That's, you know, your Oculus Rift, put a headphone, you know, put a headgear on, have the audio and the visual just take over your entire everything and, you know, focus on what you're doing.
Yeah, I would love to see where they've got, how do I want to say it? Like, I could see where this makes complete sense for, you know, like for sports, where oftentimes you want information, you're looking stuff up, you know, give me a tweet stream of some sort. You know, you're not looking for entertainment, it's information.
Yeah.
I could see that too with live events like the Oscars, you know, as people are tweeting pictures or making comments or something, you know. And again, it'd be cool if it were curated in the sense that, you know, they open that up to the Oscars and like you subscribe, you got your Oscars, but then there's also the Oscar web. What are they called? The surround web. And yeah. So it's, if someone wins, it gives you information about that person. You learn a little background context, who was the winner last year, you know, whatever. Interesting tidbits. If other celebs are tweeting about it, you could read their tweets. Oh, congratulations, you're so amazing, you know, whatever. I look at that and go, that would be really cool. Now, if I'm watching a movie, maybe what it is, it's you know, to make it actually, so it actually could happen, is it's just the background colors just change to fit the dominant scene color. And that's something I feel like it could process in real time fast enough and switch fast enough that, you know, that it could actually work. you know, because you think, like, again, in the second and third Matrix movies, they were very cognizant of when you're in the Matrix, it's green, and when you're in the real life, it's blue. And, and so, you know, the algorithm would pick up on that and, you know, just make your entire room kind of fit with that. Or you just, you know, turn it off to a static image or a picture slideshow or something. I could definitely see that. I look at that and go, that's pretty cool. And I get where, yeah, Apple's working on simplifying the interface and getting rid of that stuff. I honestly think something like that, I don't know. They're two separate directions.
Right.
I agree. I like Microsoft's direction, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I like it. Because now when I watch football games, I will go on to Twitter ahead of time, and I will find the different team tweet streams, and I'll subscribe to those, and I'll get that information. I'll look up stuff during the middle of the game, and you know, it's a big time second screen when I watch one game a year.
I'll be totally honest. I'm sitting there watching The Dark Knight Rises, which is what I was doing before this show started, and my Xbox is watching me watch The Dark Knight Rises, and all of a sudden a character comes on. I'm like, dude, what other movie was he in? And I point to him, and it highlights him like live, you know, because it knows where I'm pointing. It, you know, it, his head, you know, so it has a little cursor that it's tracking. It locks on to who that person is, does some sort of an image algorithm type thing, and all of a sudden, IMDb pops up right next to it with the other list of, you know, movies that he's been in, and I can be doing that on the side. You know, and obviously, that is a, you know, there, I just listed four different technologies that have to be integrated together that all require a lot of processing power, but the idea that, you know, you could put all those pieces together eventually into one holistic, you know, I'm now interacting with the computer. The computer's listening to me, figuring out what I want, and it's processing that information in a way that it's listening to what I say. It's watching what I do. I don't have to pick up my phone anymore in order to get the information I want. That would be pretty cool. And, you know, and you know, it's I don't know, you know, like, and to go to football. Wait. I want to see an instant replay. You know, and
yeah.
You know, and the main broadcast continues, but on the side screen you can see or the main broadcast switches to the side view and the side screen, and then all I'm just sitting around watching my own replay like live, you know, and if you can get away from the requisite for a actual, you know, input device, because you can talk to it, it can hear you, it can watch you, that would be pretty compelling. That would be pretty cool. I would drop more money than I'd, you know, be willing to say on a
more money
like
than for a self-driving car.
No.
Just get the bounds.
That is definitely what I would be saving my pennies for first.
All right. Cool. Yeah. But, so I saw that. I thought it was neat. Just rekindled my imagination.
Yeah, that is very cool. I like, you know, dude. I, you know, Microsoft has got smart people there. You know, as maligned as they can be, they're not, you know, they're not out of the race yet by any means. They do some cool stuff. So Tesla, it
I love
turns
your,
out
between each transition, it's this classic.
Yeah. So now
just
I'm self-conscious
of it.
Yeah, thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
I appreciate that. Jeez.
Yes. I love being an older brother. So Tesla.
So Tesla is in America. We've talked about this before, and so I just kind of want to fill out the rest of the story that this is the direction that they're going. In other countries, they've been selling like crazy, largely because there are carbon taxes on cars in other countries. I think it's one of your not Slavic. Finland, Norway, one of those countries up in the north, Europe, nobody really cares about them. They have a population the size of San Francisco. It's ridiculous.
You know, it always killed me when, like, Rome Total War, it would always be snowy and gross up there. So it's like, I hate conquering up there. It's just hard.
Yeah, it's exactly.
And they're all small.
Yeah, and they are. They are incredibly small. But they care about the environment. And they
Dude,
have
I gotta
these,
play that game again. That's a great game.
Right? They care about the environment, so they have carbon taxes. So for cars are expensive. You pay a lot in taxes for combustion vehicles. And Teslas, they're the top of your line electric cars. And they don't have these carbon taxes. So although the Tesla is expensive, it is at least in parity, if not cheaper, than a lot of, just your run of the mill Toyotas. Not only are they way more affordable, are they like the most affordable luxury car out in that country, they're just more affordable in general. So they're selling like crazy. Juxtapose that to America, where, you know, America is freaking out because we have, you know, our legislature has been bought and paid for by special interests in many areas of the world. And so it's like there are states where they didn't even want to allow Teslas to be sold because they didn't have a showroom, and we have laws that say that if one individual wants to sell a car to another individual, that they need to have a showroom in order to do it, which is a ridiculous premise. But hey, you know, it's the law. And so Tesla's basically, they are sitting here saying Elon Musk, he's not even American, really. He's from another country, from Africa.
Yeah, that's him.
I like him so much. They're basically sitting there saying, look, we're running into all sorts of red tape in America, and people and the auto industry is trying to stop us from selling cars, trying to stop competing toe to toe because for whatever reason they don't want to. We're building this giant gigafactory. I know.
They are competing, just differently than we would like to see.
Yeah, exactly. If you can't compete with the product, compete with legislation.
We call about there is such a thing as non-market and market competition. Yeah. They're just going after some non-market competition.
Yeah.
It's all good.
And I think they're going to lose in the long run because of it. Wow. Unless they decide to innovate. And I get the, you know, whatever. At this point, they show no signs of it. I think eventually they'll get around to it. The question is, will they do it fast enough to keep up with the real go-getters? Because there are go-getters. You know, your BMWs are starting to realize that there is a big market for, especially in Europe, for cars like this. You know, eventually Toyota's no, you know, schmuck when it comes to battery technology, and they're going to, you know, turn their sights on those markets too. If there's a market and Tesla can tap into it, everybody's going to start competing for it. And, you know, the question is, can America get on board fast enough? But basically what they've said is Tesla's going to turn to Europe. They're going to start really pushing out in Europe. They built their east to west coast supercharge stations. You can make it from one coast to the other without having to plug into an outlet. So they feel like they've built enough of their supercharge stations. Now they're going to start building them in Europe and start selling cars there and, you know, causing a ruckus over on across the pond.
Love it.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm excited for it. I'm glad because I think in the long run it's better for everybody. It's insanely annoying to me that
well, because they'll grow, they'll have the sales, they'll get momentum. It's good.
It's great, and I just wish America. I just wish it's one of those things where it'd be so good for, you know, America in general, just to be, you know, pushing innovation, and it's an American company that's building all of their stuff in America, and you know, and you know, not in my personal opinion, they're building them in my backyard, quite literally down the street from where I work. It's a great – I want Tesla to succeed and go gangbusters, not just because I hope to work for Elon Musk one day, but just because it's amazing when they do well. And you're just sitting here going, why is Detroit fighting them so incredibly hard? It's not just Detroit. I think Detroit doesn't even care as much as, you know, as – I don't know. The fact that Detroit doesn't care drives me nuts. It just drives me nuts. The whole thing drives me nuts.
They got bigger problems.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's look at another example of a company who
innovating in America. So I just want to lay this out there because I'm reading all sorts of articles about this stuff and I haven't stated what my belief is going to happen, and by my belief I mean actually tell you what's going to happen. Okay. Nobody. I have not read this anywhere. Okay. Apple has invested a tremendous amount of money into the Sapphire Crystal, phone growing, or not phone, but Sapphire Crystal growing technology. They're building this giant factory.
Right.
They're doing it for two reasons. A lot of people are debating whether or not they're going to put it on the phones. They're pretty sure they're going to put it on the watches because that is the primary use of Sapphire Crystal today, is for unbreakable watches. They're going to put it on the iWatch. That is one of the big justifications of this factory, and it will be a single piece, probably, of Sapphire, relatively thick piece of Sapphire that's going to go on your watch. The thing with the Sapphire is that it's basically unscratchable, but it's way more likely to shatter than some of your other glasses, like your Gorilla Glass. And so there's this belief, and Corning, and the reason why the article
Surprise, they would come out against it.
I know. Corning execs basically, yeah, they're like, yeah, Sapphire is a terrible idea. Why would you do that? And their big argument is that that Sapphire shatters. You can't scratch it anymore, but you drop your phone, it's going to break. And I've never done damage to my phone before just by keeping it in my pocket. My screens have always, especially on this 5S, The screen has always suffered damage due to being dropped and impact damage. Because if you don't know really, if you don't know much about material science, there's these curves that kind of like of material hardness, how you measure hardness. There's hardness comes at a cost, because the opposite of something that's really hard and stiff is something that's really flexible. And steel, one of the reasons why steel is used everywhere isn't because it's so incredibly rigid. Iron is actually stronger than steel. The reason why we use steel everywhere is because it's flexible. It's really strong, but it'll bow back.
Totally knew that.
Whereas iron never moves. And so if you get it to the point where it starts to flex, it shatters. Whereas iron or steel, like, it's really incredibly difficult to make steel shatter. Especially cast iron shatters really easily. So these are the opposite ends of the problem that they were dealing with. And the thing with the watch is generally it's strapped to your wrist, so you never drop it. you know.
Sure.
Yeah, and if you
and, you just and the, knock it on stuff by accident.
Which is something that it's relatively that Sapphire is relatively good surviving against. Part of this is how hard are you hitting it, what force are you doing it, what's the momentum behind it, stuff like that. And it just in general, Sapphire is, like I've said, Sapphire is used in the highest end watches. That's what the entire market is for. It's not a ridiculous premise that Apple would use it and use it primarily. So the big question everybody asking is, well, are you going to use Sapphire on the phones? Mm-hmm. Well, and this is the answer, okay. I'm just going to lay it out there. Nice. Sapphire crystal, you're allowed to make, you can make it incredibly thin sheets of sapphire. I mean, just like a fraction of what the
microns of fractions. Yeah.
You can make it a fraction of what the current thickness of the glass is, which a lot of people think is a big selling point, because you could have these incredibly thin sheets of glass. And what they're going to do is they're going to make a really thin sheet of glass, and they're going to use a Corning Gorilla Glass or similar, and they're going to use a laminate. And then they're going to put the two back to back, and they're going to have one piece put together. And the Corning Gorilla Glass is going to give it that backing of flexibility and strength. And that incredibly thin sheet of sapphire is going to be used for your scratch resilience. And I almost guarantee, and it's funny, I'm a little bit concerned that I may never be proven right on this, because there's a chance that Apple might just not tell anybody that they're doing this and do it anyways. But they'll do it as a laminate. And in cars, you know, if you ever try to break a car window, they're really hard to break, and the reason why they're really hard to break is because they're all laminate. They shatter in specific ways. They're actually two sheets of glass stuck together with some sort of plastic composite. And
totally knew that too.
Exactly. And it's all about how these things shatter. That's how you build strong glass. You know, Corning's Gorilla Glass is awesome because it's incredibly scratch resistant. And it's very strong on it, or it's flexible on its own.
What do you think about those rumors of covering the entire? You okay over there, bud?
Give me 1 second. I might.
What do you think about those rumors of them covering the entire phone in glass, so that people can finally get rid of their cases?
It's possible.
Okay.
I think it's possible. I think they're.
What about probable, though?
I think one of the things that you're going to see, from what I can tell, what they're going to do is they're going to leave the basic size of the iPhone the same. And what they're going to do is they're going to get rid of the side bezels. And if you measure what the actual width of the phone is, mm-hmm. without the sides bezels, and you extend all your dimensions out, you know, accordingly, in ratio, you end up with a 4.7-inch 16x9 screen, which is why that has weight. And they've shown test glass, you know, which, you know, rumored test glass has come off before. It's just one of those things that makes a lot of sense. So basically what everybody thinks they're going to do is they're going to take the LCD out to the very edge of the screen, And if they do that, you're going to have to do something cosmetically to cover that. So you're not going to necessarily put just glass there. It's going to be some sort of a steel barrier. To put glass on top of that would make sense. But you know what? I really need to get some water. I'm going to be right back. Sorry about this. Might need to cut it out later. I'm on the trail end of a cold here, and I realized I took some nose and cough medicine about 4 hours and 10 minutes ago. And guess how long the medicine lasts for? It's crazy.
All right. Well, I want to move on because we're running low on time here, and we spent way too much time on that topic.
Go for it.
So I'm just going to – man, I'm really bummed. I was sharing something good there. Oh, well.
Bummer.
I guess I'll cut it out later. Here we go.
Smile. No, I'm not taking your picture. I'm taking my picture. Not my face, my body. Not the outside, the inside. This got weird. Let me start over. See this iPhone case? It's more than just an iPhone case. It's a powerful health monitor.
It's a powerful health monitor. Oh, come on. Internet, you're killing me.
Oh. It's a great little video. It's worth watching.
It is.
It's pretty cute.
I'm actually, wow, I am just struggling right now, aren't I? Yeah. To get my computer to work.
Smile.
Yep, that's great.
All that RAM, what was it worth?
Nothing.
It's got weird. Let me start over.
All right, here we
go. See this iPhone case? It's more than just an iPhone case. It's a powerful health monitoring device. These are the sensors where my fingers go.
I put them here,
and I wait a few seconds. Now I have a snapshot of my health that looks like this.
Sure.
The readout of my vitals. The kind of stuff you've always needed really expensive machines for. I can now get it any time you want. You can measure your heart rate, your blood pressure, your blood oxygen level, your respiration. Your heart rate variability, which tells you your stress level. There's even an ECG. That's a fancy way of saying it measures the electrical activity in your heart. Even your temperature. Coming down with a fever, you'll be the first to know. And it does all this with medical-grade accuracy. It connects automatically to your phone with Bluetooth LE.
Of course.
Sending the data from your sensors to the app, so all your vitals are captured, measured, and logged. And the battery lasts 2 months on a single charge.
It's a long time.
It keeps on going. Just like you. Use it for your whole family if you want. You can capture data for multiple users and track them all separately in the app. It measures more than just your heart and your temperature. It even measures your lung functions with the included spirometer attached.
That's crazy.
Just like what doctors use. But way more
affordable.
Yeah, I get it.
The spirometer tells you your lung capacity and airflow. Important stuff. Already wear a device that tracks your physical activity.
Like you.
It'll sync with the app, so you have all your data in one place. The more you know about your body, the better you can be at taking care of it. So smile. This is Wella.
Smile. So what do you think?
I want one so bad I can't stand it.
Oh, I bet, because you already have the Fitbit, which he says would integrate with it, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the Fitbit or the Up that he was wearing.
Well, they're very vague about it, and I think they do that on purpose because I'll bet it integrates with the Up, the Fitbit, and the Nike Feelband and the Samsung, you know, Flex one that comes around, and I bet they're trying to integrate with everything. Everything with an API.
$200! Oh, my gosh.
That's why I don't have one, but I want one. It's cool, man. It drives me crazy that I'm not as good of an engineer as I'd like to be with this sort of thing, because I've wanted this for like months or like a year. I wanted this a year ago. I knew that this was coming, and it's like, and all you have to do is do a little bit of research into how do you calculate calorie burn, and it becomes incredibly obvious that this is the direction we're going, because steps is a decent approximation for how many calories you've burned. Heart rate is a pretty good one. Actual breath analysis is the way we, like, you know, you do it for like medical grade testing. You know, for super accurate stuff, which means it's coming next. That one's a little bit further off, though. It's because it's rather invasive. Whereas this, I don't know, it's really cool. For me, the problem that I have...
It's Fitbit for starters on devices.
Nice. One of the things I take pause on is that it's something that it's an app I have to turn on, and then I have to test it. It's not continuous monitoring, which is what I like about the Fitbit. It's continuous background monitoring. And it's one of the reasons why I want, Samsung's Galaxy Gear
Watch, yeah.
Whatever, their version of it, because it's a continuous monitoring and it does heartbeat monitoring. That's what I want. And the iWatch, if it doesn't have a heartbeat monitor, which it will, there's absolutely no reason for me to get it. I won't even consider it. To me, that's the next step. That's what I want. What's cool about this is it's got everything else. It's got your, like they say, the EKG, different heart information, your sweat analysis, your lung breathing. I don't know, which is all cool. I mean, it's got a lot of cool stuff. And if I had $200 just lying around not doing anything, I can tell you what, man, I'd buy one today. Or whenever it goes on sale. But I don't know, it's the future of health tech. It's awesome. It's very cool. I think in the long run, it's not going to sell as well as they want it to because it's not continuous quantifying of your information. But it's cool.
It's one of those where that product would have been really good 2 years ago.
Yep. It would have been amazing 2 years ago.
It would have gotten into the Apple store. It would have sold like hotcakes. People would have loved it. But now with the watches coming out, it's kind of like... sorry guys, you're a little late to the game. You really are. Because now people like you're going to hold off. You're like, well, I want to see what the iWatch does first.
Right, exactly.
But still cool. And
very cool.
Really good video.
I know, yeah, it's a great
just well
video.
Done. Just well done.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Okay, so final two, I guess. So,
I counted cool. three, but okay.
Well, the last two are one.
Oh, okay.
That's why they got the offset. Bomber's bridge too far. So do you hear why Bomber got fired?
Yeah, I did. Because he tried to acquire BlackBerry.
No. What?
Oh, man. Freudian slip. Whatever. It's a dead company. Nokia.
Yeah. Yeah, basically what happened was when he walked into the board and had one of his little tantrums, they say.
Which they say is normal for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he's done it in public. But he flipped out and basically was like, look, either let me buy Nokia or what's the point of me being CEO? And the board said, that's a good question. after letting him buy.
Well,
Nokia.
It wasn't even just the buying Nokia. It was, are we sticking with software only, or are we going to get, big time into the hardware?
Yeah.
And everyone on the board was like, we think we should double down on software. And he was like, no, we should get in the hardware. And so they were like, and in the end, it was the worst of all situations where the board ended up buying hardware. Ballmer lost his dream job and the ability to see what, he had started, finish. And then Nadella has to clean it all up.
Right.
Like, it's the worst of all outcomes. Yeah, it was just interesting to learn a little about the inner workings, and I guess he's a screamer. Yeah. I would struggle to work for and with a screamer, just for the record. Yeah, that just doesn't sound like fun. I don't know how someone like that actually gets in charge. I don't get it.
He's a sociopath, which most high-powered CEOs are. I mean, that's demonstrably true.
That means about me.
I know, right?
I don't have to be.
Yeah.
I like where I'm at.
Yeah. You know what? And you want to know what, James? That's how you know you're not a sociopath. But it's actually
comforting.
It's, I know. It's actually been really interesting in the last like 6 months. There's been a lot of research being like that's being published. These long-term studies, widespread studies about what, you know, we know a lot about sociopathy, but it's, you know, the bigger question of how does that fit into society? And it's sort of like, you know, Asperger's and autism in general. You know, we think of this as a disease, but there's, you know, as we understand more about it and people talk more about it, there's the question of, well, maybe there's a purpose for it. Maybe it helps society in some way. Maybe it's not just a disease that leads you to murder people, not in the case of autism. But definitely, you know, obviously some of our greatest leaders, most of our greatest leaders in industry and government are sociopaths. So it's got some sort of value.
yeah, really.
But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, and that's But yeah, like you said, it's definitely fascinating. As you try to put together what was going on it, you know, what is the overall strategy at Microsoft? What does this mean for the future? Where are they going? And you see, you know, an article like this comes out, and you're like, oh, there isn't a holistic strategy because. You know, there's different teams, and some are winning, some are losing, and like you said, the worst possible thing happened.
Well, it's weird. I mean, I get where Microsoft was coming from, where it was like Nokia is their one and only partner, essentially, and they were starting to flirt around with Android and drop some big hints that, we may not be totally committed to the Windows Phone era, and they're like, dude, if we're going to lose, we'll be done. And they're like, if we want to stay in this game, we got to buy our way in. And, you know, so I get that. I also get the board where they're like, dude, that's not our core strength. Why are we going to buy this? And when we're not good at it, we know nothing about it, essentially doing what Google did, except we don't need the patents because we've, you know, we've got enough. And, you know, I just sit there and it's like, that's tough. That's a tough – they're in a very, very tough spot, and I don't know what the obvious answer is for Nadella to do. You know, clearly the acquisition is going through, but I could also see in 5 years where they've shipped it off or something. What they really need is some other companies to pick up their operating system. I don't know if that's going to happen, man. I just they keep getting further and further behind the curve, and yeah.
Yeah. I don't know either. I mean,
they got enough money. They could pull it around. They could do something to, you know, invest heavily in it, do some other bets, tie it in well with other stuff. You know, I could see it, but, I mean, we're talking like 10 years from now. You're like, yeah, okay, it wasn't a complete failure.
Right.
I mean, that's the best outcome they could ask for.
Right. I agree.
Unless they come up with a Lumi phone or something. That would be cool, actually. I'd be interested in that.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Always interesting, though. Backstory.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then the last piece of news, and this is, I left this, this is my dessert for the podcast. Windows Phone, speaking of Nokia, has finally surpassed BlackBerry in the U.S. market share number. So
BlackBerry is doing terribly.
You know, it's just,
you are above 0%.
Yay! And what's really funny about this is that it's like there's a big there's a big tiff a week or two back with T-Mobile. They had this ad campaign where they basically said, don't like your BlackBerry? Get rid of it. Get an iPhone. And BlackBerry freaked out and they like hated. And they got all angry about it, and the T-Mobile CEO was like, sorry about that. BlackBerry customers are great. We didn't mean to. Like, if you want to just upgrade your BlackBerry phone to a better BlackBerry phone, you can do that too. They, like, changed the promotion to make it BlackBerry-friendly, and nobody took advantage of it. They all got rid of their Black phones and BlackBerries and iPhones. I love it. I love watching this company just collapse under their.
I know you do.
I know, and it's because they get their comeuppance. I said, what happens when you stop innovating and you take, you know, and you rest on your laurels? You lose. You're supposed to lose. That's what drives me nuts about what's going on with the automakers in America, right? Automobile makers in America right now with Tesla. You're supposed to lose if you don't innovate and you don't come up with the best technology. You're not supposed to be able to support, you know, to protect your position because they're not selling it out of the right store. You know, BlackBerry's losing because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. And I feel bad for the people that are losing their jobs. I really do. You know, unless you're not doing it well because you're not innovating. But if all you are is just like a worker, you know, working in the factories, trying to make a living, like, you know, send your kids to college, I feel bad for you. I really do. But at the same time, it's better for everybody. And long term, you know, it doesn't feel this way, but long term, it's better for you too. because, you know, you're not supposed to win if you're lazy.
Oh, man. You're brutal sometimes.
It's the end of the show, so I just pull out all the stops.
I like it, man.
Me too.
It's a slow but certain death. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Cool. Hey, good show.
Yeah, you too.
There was a lot that happened. We didn't even touch on Facebook buying Titan, which I feel like was newsworthy, but that happens. That's all right. It's all good.
I have a feeling we'll get another chance to talk about it.
Yeah, when they actually do it.
Yeah, and talk about it. Exactly. You know.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, cool. Cool. Well, everybody, thank you. I'm like, what am I doing? Something. I don't know what. Okay, thank you, everybody, for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. Thank you.